Call the meeting in order.
Pledge.
Richard.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor, roll call.
Karen Armstrong.
Yes.
Frank Kay.
Here.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Stan Kowalski. Richard Levine.
Here.
Ed Marin.
Here.
Carol Race. Pauline Stone.
Here.
Steve Trombley.
Here.
Brett Palmer.
Move to C. Resolved that Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the agenda.
Move.
By Richard. By Leonard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'll open the floor for public comment. Anybody has any comment for the board? Okay, move on to presentations. Our presentations, we'll be moving over next door from the students from Mrs. Redmond and Mrs. Sui's classes.
This presentation, they initially did this presentation as either like brochures
or they did PowerPoint stuff, posters, and they each answered some questions about energy drinks and then researched an individual energy drink. So instead of having you sit through several different presentations on an individual energy drink, we sort of combined everything into one for you tonight. So this is a PowerPoint that combines several students' projects into one. Okay. Well, thank you. This is Anika Craig. Oh, maybe I should introduce them. Sorry. Why don't you guys stand up? And I'll introduce you guys. Okay. So these are our presenters tonight. These are all eighth grade students. This is Chelsea Halaga, Kayla Weaver, Mikhail Prajet, Anika Craig, Katie Lucia, and Skylar Archer.
Thanks for being with us.
What are energy drinks? A drink which is meant to apply a mental and physical boost of energy. And these are the examples of energy drinks. Energy drinks versus cocktails. While sometimes confused, they are not the same. Energy drinks supply your boost with caffeine, lots of sugar, and other substances like taurine, boron, and inside, etc. Most of these drinks lead to a crash in a couple of hours and 20 seconds to zero. Slow drinks are between parts of your body, and a little body after a intense workout do not contain caffeine and other nutrients. Energy drinks popularity. U.S. sales. In 1997, it was 12 million. In 2009, it was up to 4 billion. And then in 2010, is the expected sales of 10 billion. Energy drinks use catchy names, flashy brands, sports, stars, and music to start to market their products.
A lot of these energy drinks use slogans and sponsors to get people who want to buy them. And this is Rockstar, and the slogan is Party Like a Rockstar, and it's sponsored by Snowboard. This is NASCAR Racing, and its slogan is Universal. This is sponsored by ATV Racing, and this is from Monster, and it's Unleash the Beast. And this one is and it sponsors a lot of music.
We have links that we were hoping to keep, but unfortunately the internet connection is being used. However, you have the links if you're interested in looking at them at a later time.
A lot of these industries try telling us that they're marketed towards adults when we actually went through and researched, they're actually targeted towards ages 12 through 30.
Energy drinks range anywhere from 80 milligrams to 500 milligrams of caffeine, and the FDA recommends that soda drinks contain no more than 60 milligrams of caffeine. Consuming 250 milligrams of caffeine at one time or not can result in caffeine poisoning. There is a bar graph of how much caffeine is in each of the energy drinks. Caffeine side effects are increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, difficulty sleeping, and difficulty concentrating. In large doses, it can lead to restlessness, excitement, insomnia, flushing of the face, increased urination, muscle twitching, and weight. Young people who have not been consuming caffeine as long as adults are much more prone to suffering side effects. And this is the side effect of the Association reported an energy drinks cause a variety of adverse health effects, with the worst cases including seizures and even death. Other ingredients are amino acids, vitamins, minerals, and herbs. Use of these ingredients in energy drinks sometimes tricks people into thinking that these are health drinks, but don't be fooled. Some of these products are added in such high amounts, 200% or more of the recommended amount, which can lead to overdoses on vitamins and minerals, which means side effects, deepening and flushed skin, dizziness, nausea, and so forth. Sugar content. Recently, the American Heart Association recommended that girls take in no more than 6 teaspoons of added sugars per day, and boys no more than 9 teaspoons. Increased sugar intake is thought to be linked to the current obesity epidemic in the US. And this is the amount of sugar content in energy drinks. Energy drinks are especially dangerous for infants and toddlers. These drinks cause you to urinate more often and can cause dehydration during a sporting event. They also cause increased heart rate and blood pressure, both of which happen naturally while exercising. Doubling that effect can put a massive load on the heart. Many ingredients in energy drinks are marketed as nutritionists for performance. Energy drinks have been popping up in the news lately, but not because of all their energy. School bans Red Bull energy drinks after it starts classes. Among school, increase in inappropriate behavior after pupils down the drinks before lessons. New Jersey middle school bans energy drinks over hot dog drinks. Our ledger implies images. School tells energy drinks to buzz off. Virginia High School bans beverages on athletic fields because of toddlers. CBS. Pennsylvania School District bans energy drinks. School puts the lid on high caffeine beverages and says energy drinks pose health risks. A Saskatchewan school board is banning energy drinks from school property. Fred, California Superintendent of Education, says he's surprised that energy drinks don't have their confidence in their content. Are as readily available as they are. You think about what's best for student learning. Chocolate milk. Coming with the equivalent over lunchtime of 8 or 10 cups of coffee plus 3 or 4 times the amount of sugar as my regular cup or a big one of the year.
Missouri Canada State and New Jersey State. His mother, Bonnie, was founded by Friday morning after hearing what she described as strange burglary noise. She said she had her son on the couch where she discovered aspirated and turned blue. She asked her husband to perform CPR on his daily unit in the hospital. Doctors agreed that her son's seizure was likely triggered by energy drinks he had consumed that evening.
That's a CNN report on energy drinks that I'm not going to be able to show you, but it's really good. You might want to check it out on your own if you get a chance to.
Specific populations that for noisy drinks include both involving physical activity, kids, people with heart problems and other medical conditions, pregnant women, anyone who's caffeine sensitive, and anyone who's taking medication. After doing the research, many students are able to be better at doing what these drinks altogether. Stephen Conner School Education Survey of 3-1-10. Total of 257 students responded. 64% have tried or drank energy drinks. Of those that are drinking them, 27% are drinking them before entering school. 60% of students drink them have experienced some sort of side effects. The most common side effects known to be injuries, difficulty concentrating, headache, and dizziness. 4% of energy drink users are usually familiar several times a day after eating a little sugar.
questions?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's a well-prepared report. I'm sure we have questions.
At least on energy drinks on campus.
What up, buddy?
No.
Other questions?
You think they should be?
Yes.
Another question. In your research, did you discover why or if the Food and Drug Administration puts warning labels on these drinks?
Why they put them on?
Are they on there currently or not?
They put warning labels on them. It depends on the drink. Some of them warn pregnant women and people who are caffeine sensitive against them. There's one drink, like if you watch that CNN report, that says there's one particular drink called Spike Shooter that they're warning people 18 and under not to use it. But there's absolutely nothing that tells a 5-year-old that they can't go get it. Like, for example, a girlfriend of mine, she has a 5-year-old. She's a teacher in Cumberland Head, and her son wanted a drink, and she let him go to the juice, and he came back with an energy drink, and it had, you know, had a dragon on the side of it, so he wanted it. And they really do market toward younger people. It's a little bit scary how much stuff is in
there. Question of the presenters again. With your classmates, do you find that there's a distinct difference in their choice between the power drink, the energy drink versus the sports drink? Yeah. Do they make significant choices consciously to pick one over the other? You think, your classmates or yourself?
For us,
this
is pretty good. What do you think?
I mean, when a kid is grabbing a drink, do you think they're making a conscious choice which type?
No.
So, okay. I'm just curious, because if it's a habit of just grabbing a drink, it might be having an alternative is very different.
Just based on our experience with the kids and what we've seen in the middle school, they do not understand the health risks that are involved. Mm-hmm. Students really don't. And it's nice that we have Google Fitness where we can talk about that with the students who sign up for it so that they can go out and educate their peers too.
Sure.
Mr. Mayor has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was there any conjecture on potential long-term side effects?
The problem right now is that, there's a lot of studies on caffeine itself. But the other ingredients that are in there, like guarana, ginseng, taurine, things that they think have that they think have other energy giving properties, there's not a lot of long term studies on it, which is why there's a lot of doctors, people in schools, nutritionists that are very scared of them being out in the market because there's really not a lot of studies right now of them. When you combine big quantities of these herbs on top of caffeine and they all do the same thing, they don't know what's going to do in people's bodies. So kids are turning off the seizures and different types of side effects that they're getting from them, health problems.
Are energy drinks currently addressed in our wellness policy?
No.
I was going to think of just a conservation, $10 billion business. And it's really geared for teenagers and the third.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a shame to think about it, but that's what's driving the market.
Oh yeah.
So kids come in with a couple of them in their lunch pails sometimes.
Well, that's where we got our. Well, that's where I first started seeing it because I was teaching class and I had two students who would stay up all night and then bring in three huge monsters and slam them throughout the day just to be able to function during school. And they kept this up. And they complained. Yeah, well, they were complaining of headaches and not feeling well. And I told them, but obviously they chose to not follow. But they were not educated. They had no idea of what it was doing to us.
Your question? Did you ask any chance when you did your survey? Is there a trend of judgment? Like, are boys more apt to do?
According in the survey, it was anonymous today, so we didn't know who filled it out. But in general, like the normal research that we found showed that males use them more. And if you looked at some of the ways that they're targeting kids, like snowboarding, but there's a lot of motocross sports, and then bands, like I think they tend to target more toward males with the type of activities that they're wanting to do.
So what's the plan to make this information accessible to the rest of the school population?
I mean, that we don't know. So after presenting it to you tonight, hopefully, like they do. I know that the high school health class does do the. Do a unit, I think, on energy drinks. They definitely get the information out there, and every student in high school, I think, has to take health. I know in the middle school health class, they do a bit on caffeine, and then our class is an elective, so not every student gets it. So somehow we probably need to make sure that everybody gets this information. We haven't gotten that far yet, but I think it's important.
Organizations like, as you know, American Heart Association and the National Traffic Safety Administration. Took years to get information across relative to smoking and its effect on your body and the seatbelt law. How many years did it take of the same information being presented to the to society before enough momentum took hold for that to change?
I agree, though, and I think there are a lot of parents that don't have, you know, an idea of what exactly their child is drinking. We have kids in middle school, their parents buy them energy. I really don't think they understand the health risks that are involved.
We could put something in the newsletter so it represents the website somewhere.
We did a newsletter article earlier this year. Not that it shouldn't be done again, but we could try that for one for parents. But
I think an idea would be some of you students to be interviewed on the video news and reference a link and have a link to this. The whole presentation on our website too. So students listen raptly to the video news every Friday. So if you guys could get on the news and talk about, put a little 30-second blurb about what you've done and direct them to the link on the website, maybe they would look at it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Could we? In the near future, can we take a look at the wellness policy and see if it's included in your items? So that we actually do address it.
Another idea you might consider is, since it is a PowerPoint, you could probably set it up as a scrolling PowerPoint, because sometimes, even with the narration, a subtle suggestion of reading it and seeing it, etc., in a period of time, can sometimes make a difference with people who just. How many of you are influenced us or influenced by commercials? I mean, we swear we didn't just see that commercial, but we know the jingle, and we know the words, and we know all the parts because it's all subconscious. So that's another possibility as well.
Pretty sure some teachers would show it in their study halls as well.
Mm-hmm.
Lunch study hall would be a perfect opportunity, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I was thinking, is caffeine considered a drug in our?
Well, it's a stimulant
because of their programs available to our students in fifth grade.
Yeah, so. We also have Dave Manning, who comes into my sixth grade home and career skills, and he does talk to the kids, but it's not as in depth as this is. And I try to make a point, like today when the kids took the survey, you know, I tried to explain just because they had no idea. They were like, well, what's the problem with it? It really does spark nice conversation in class. So it definitely has them speaking about it, and they were talking about it today, especially my sixth graders, about, you know, what did you put down, and did you drink energy drinks, or your girls did spark some really great talk in class.
Now, sports drinks are entirely different, and they're relatively safe compared to energy drinks.
Yeah, but some kids don't understand the difference, and
they think the energy drinks are sports drinks.
Yeah, right, so they're grabbing an energy drink, thinking it's a sports drink, and not understanding, and the scary part is if you take this when you are doing something sport-like, you're really going to get in trouble, you know, so.
Never been there, and we done yet, those 2 years.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank the presenters in particular for 3 specific reasons. One of them is the thoroughness of your research. Those slides are pretty powerful, a collection of data, and I think that's credit to the amount of energy you put into, no pun intended, the energy you put into getting your data to make the presentation. A second reason is the use of the PowerPoint. It's obvious that our technology is going in good hands and that you're applying that technology in a presentation as important as this one. And third, the fact that you came out tonight to represent with that which you apparently have a great deal of passion about, having communicated. So for those 3 reasons, I think. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, I have diet caffeine.
Oh, really? Sure.
So I've been converted. No, it's not sugar. They pulled out, they pulled like an ingredient, it's no longer sugar.
There's no sugar in
there. He's a saccharide, listen. You want to get into the detail now?
Okay, we'll move on to reports. Superintendent's report.
Yeah, a couple of very short items. First, as many of the board members know, we had staff development activities yesterday for the Beacon Town Teacher Association Staff Development Day. A lot of activities, a lot of workshops spread out throughout the entire district. I had the opportunity to attend parts of about three of those presentations, and in all three of them, very different topics, but in all three of them, I was just impressed with the presentation as well as the benefit that the participants felt about being there. So that was a great day. A negotiation session was held with the Beacon Town Support Staff Association yesterday, and positive results have been made with less complicated matters. Pauline is smiling when I say that. And another session has been scheduled for April 26th as a follow-up. So those are my two items. There's a third good news item, but I'm going to defer to when Ron gets his report because he would like to share that with you as well. And I agree. That's it.
Okay. Questions for the superintendent right now? Okay, Ron?
Well, I'll save the good news item as the last because I don't want it to get lost in the business part of it. Prior to the beginning of the meeting, I distributed the extracurricular financial report that was on the agenda for approval, but it wasn't in the board packet because it came late from the treasurer, the classroom treasurer. Mm-hmm. So just to let you know, that's what that was, and I passed out. And then also, we need to establish the time for the next audit committee meeting. We didn't have the March financials April meeting. We won't have the March financials for the first meeting in April because it's too soon at the beginning of the month, and we have a day off, the holiday in between. So we were wondering if we could move that meeting to the second meeting of the month or sometime in between.
I have no problem with it. Ed is a
pardon me, the coffee is cooked.
Before the second meeting, like you have before the first meeting?
Instead of the first?
Or any time in between, but if we did it the second meeting of the month, which is actually a week early, would you still want to bring the financials forward to the board that very same night? We can have the financials out to the board members in their board packets so they have 2 weeks to look at them, but the audit committee will only be looking at them that night, and then maybe the board will be moving on them later that evening. It's entirely up to you.
Well, give them a day or two to determine the weather going.
This would just be for that 1 month, and then the following month go back to
the because of the way the schedule works and the meetings are all. Mm-hmm.
The Board of Education will meet on April 6th and April 20th, the first Tuesday and the third Tuesday.
April 6th is the.
Is the public presentation on the budget.
Right.
So I guess what I'm proposing is that we would have the audit meeting on the 20th, and then later that day we would vote on the financials that you'd look at on the 20th, if that's okay with you.
It's fine, yeah.
Okay.
Now what time?
Being that it's not the internal auditor is not going to be there, we probably don't need to meet at 4, we could meet at 5.
5,
if
okay.
That works for you?
Yep.
Mr. Merriman, is that perfect? Yeah. Now that that's out of the way, I have a good news item to report. happy to report to the board that the New York State CPA Society has appointed Mary Bland, our district treasurer, to sit on the Public Schools Committee, and we consider this a high honor. She'll be representing us there, and we'd like to congratulate her and inform the board of this.
Good. Thank you very much.
That's all I have. I know that Mary will serve us well and serve that committee well.
I'm sure. Congratulations. Okay, Brett will be here. When he gets here, we'll move on to his report. Minutes. Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the minutes of the meeting of the Board of Education held on 3/9. By Richard.
Second.
By Pauline. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby accept the minutes of the committee meeting held on, that's the Operations Committee, on the 9th.
Motion.
By Leonard. Seconded by Richard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that Superintendent of the Schools recommends to the Board of Education the approval of the CSE recommendations dated 3/23/10.
Move it.
Frank. Need a second?
Second.
Seconded by Leonard. Any questions on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Appointments. Resolved that the Superintendent of the Schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following temporary on-call appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Motion.
By Richard.
Second.
By Pauline. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Under B, resolved that the Superintendent of the Schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following substitute appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Motion.
By Leonard.
Second.
By Richard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Miscellaneous. Resolved that the Superintendent of the Schools recommends to the Board of Education to adopt the 2010-11 school calendar. Everybody should have gotten a copy of that in their packet. Motion by Richard.
Second.
Second by Leonard. Any questions on this?
Yes. Is everybody on the same one, or are we on the BOCES one, or whatever happened?
This is a BOCES one, I believe. This is the one for our BOCES.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Under B, resolved that Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education to consider the 1994 Tenet walk-behind scrubber, which is in storage and not utilized since 2003, be declared obsolete pursuant to Policy 6900, and that the district donate this 1994 Tenet walk-behind to Seton Catholic School.
Move it.
Second.
Motion by Frank, seconded by Richard. Any discussion on that? Any questions or anything?
Did they request it? It was just.
I don't know what you did. It precipitated the offer.
We knew there was a need.
Right.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the following policies.
Move the list.
Richard. And a second?
Second.
Seconded by Leonard. Any questions on these? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the Board of Education accept the following reports as presented by the Audit Committee.
Motion.
By Richard.
Second.
And by Leonard. Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the Board of Education acknowledge receipt of the Warren Report for February.
Motion.
Richard.
Second.
Seconded by Leonard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the Superintendent of the School recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following transfers over $5,000. Motion by Richard.
Second.
By Leonard. Questions?
Yes, we figure out how we're paying for it.
We need a roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong?
Yes.
Frank Kay?
Yes.
Leonard King?
Yes.
Stan Karosky, Richard Levine.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Carol Race, Pauline Stone.
Yes.
Steve Trombley.
Yes. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the following donations and approve amending the district budget to increase in the amount of $3,200.
Second.
Motion by Leonard. Seconded by Richard. How do we get money from the Clinton County Treasurer?
Great question. The Clinton County Treasurer wrote the check for us to receive this, but the actual money came from the Eat Well, Play Hard Committee of the Health
Department. Also through the Health Department.
So the Health Department to the county, and then the county to us.
Okay.
And thank you, Mrs. Barnes, for that information. It's a great question.
Any other questions? Can we need a roll call, please?
Karen Armstrong?
Yes.
Frank Kane?
Yes.
Leonard King?
Yes.
Stan Karosky? Richard Levine?
Yes.
Ed Marin?
Yes.
Carol Race? Pauline Stone?
Yes.
Steve Trombley?
Yes. Under E, recommended to the voters of the district at the annual district meeting on May 18th, 2010, the following propositions. This is the bus proposition. Okay, you want me to read it? Okay, so.
No, you don't.
Motion by Richard. Okay, I need a second first.
A second.
Motion by Leonard. Okay, questions?
Yes, just to put in public comment, I know that there have people have asked and budget issues and why buy buses if some of the buses look like they're not quite so full and the extended route. I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm saying that's a question that might be coming forward from people in the public. So we should be prepared for an answer of this. How it is.
The I'll provide, and certainly other board members have heard this question, I'm sure, in the past, so please feel free. But one of the decisions that first is made in terms of bus routes is whether or not the size of a bus that's needed to be purchased will in fact be large enough or too large, et cetera. Historically, because we, in most districts, I believe ours is no different, uses the buses for not just the transportation of the students, but away games, field trips, et cetera, right, that might involve full buses. The question is the economics of buying a bus that's too small and needing two for all those extra efforts. That was one variable that comes into it. In terms of the bus routes themselves, they vary, obviously, from year to year. I think that is also taken into consideration. The actual purchasing plan for the buses has been an established process for the board for the recent number of years in terms of turning over the buses at a regular schedule. And it's in part what the bus company will build or make available to schools to purchase at whatever quotes they want to provide. So those are three quick responses to that question. Others may have.
We brought this up last year, and Shane looked at it, because what was happening was they had probably, say it's a 40-seat bus, they had 38 people, but 12 of them drive their own cars, and they were leaving a seat open for everybody just in case. So they were going to look at it to think, well, maybe we don't need 12, maybe we need 3 or 4. And we probably need an update from Shane if you want to see if we're doing that.
I remember that last year was good explanations for all the questions. I'm just trying to figure out a mechanism to allow the public to be informed of the due diligence in the process to make sure that we preempt any questions before the election so that public will inform.
The second part of the cost of the buses, it's been determined that after 10 years it costs more to repair them than to get new ones.
As far as the judicial fiscal.
Right, with the rotation that we're on, getting rid of three and getting three more.
But because of the economic times, I want to be able to inform the public ahead of time so we're prepared for that.
Yeah, because we didn't, but didn't we one year that it didn't pass and next year we had to buy a whole bunch extra? So the thing is,
I've been on 15 years and I think they passed every
the
year.
The bus is always on. Pretty much.
I thought one year we
did. It's a really good system that they actually have as far as rotating.
I don't ever recall one ever not passing.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. One, but then we had to buy more the next time, didn't we?
I don't know. I don't ever recall one not passing, but maybe.
One question I have, though, is this more than we normally pass on buses, or
sure.
is this?
Oh, yeah.
I've got a
problem. Did they go up that much, or is this a?
Yeah, I've got a breakdown of the information. Anticipating this would be a question tonight. Bus proposition last year for four buses was $375,798, and that allowed the purchase of four buses, 48 passenger buses. And for information, state aid on those buses, it was 78.7%. The bus proposition before you in this particular language is, as you see, some larger buses, but the critical difference here is that there was a handicapped accessible bus purchase this year, and there wasn't last year, and the cost differential on that is $12,000. So by virtue of having a specialty service bus in the mix of the four, it increases the overall cost by at least $12,000. In addition, we also have determined that the regular bus prices, which is really your simple question, Steve, have gone up approximately $2,500 a bus. I can't say for each bus because a handicapped accessible bus is $12,000 in itself, so I can't tell you the exact number. It's about $2,500 for the quote standard bus. A couple of things also were done with the plan for this year. We have not in the past purchased extended year warranties. Last year, or this current year, I should say, that kind of reached up and bit us a bit because we had two engine issues that had to be resolved, at least I think to the tune of $8,000, and they were past their warranty period. There's now 10-year warranties on these buses, and that increased the prices for the buses for the engines about $3,500 a bus. So you got four buses plus that $3,500 warranty. We lose approximately $2,000 in the trade-in on each bus this year from last year. So there's that loss to factor in. And the there's two other variables. The 5-year warranty on transmissions, I understand that was a little bit longer warranty, if there ever was one, I'm not sure. But it's about $500 a bus to have a 5-year warranty on transmissions. And if you know, obviously, transmission work on your car, $500 is you wish you could keep it under that. The last area was a question regarding the white roof or tinted roof windows. With state aid, because this year's state aid ratio is 80.3%. So with the state aid ratio on the cost of the white roof, on the buses in general, but the white roof and tinted windows, it amounts to $340 of out-of-district money to have white roof and tinted windows. The advantages are both real and perceptual. In cold weather, the heat is able to remain inside the buses because of the tinted windows. In hot weather, the white reflects the light so that it doesn't heat up the buses. Is there a cost ratio I can tell you about how much you save on heat and versus how much more comfortable the ride is? I don't have that. But what I did do, over a 10-year life of each bus, that out of pocket, if you will, is $34 a year for having those two pieces. What I did do is ask for a quick survey of our neighboring districts to see where they are and faced with the same decisions. And we surveyed 14 districts. 8 of the 14 districts have the white roofs on their buses. Of the 14 districts, 11 total have tinted windows. And the balance of the districts of those 14 that don't have that have an either an or going on are in the process of either ordering one or both of them. If they have one, they're getting the other one as part of their order. Or if they have none, they're getting ordered. They're placing orders to get both of them on. So we put all that data together to try to give some, obviously, some foundational support for the overall cost of the buses.
Okay, Claire?
Well, one of the things is, what is the total cost, not what the government has given us back? What is the cost of that between the...
Per bus, about $1,700.
I don't think that's necessary to put to the public myself. I think $1,700 per bus. We're in years there where people are trying to cut back. Why are we throwing extra at them this year? Where is the inconvenience that we've seen in the past to students coming in? I think that's something there that ought to be taken out of that.
Yeah, I feel if we were in Florida or if we were in California, it would make a difference, but you know how long.
Now, after the state aid, you said it's $340 per bus?
Yeah.
Now, since we're talking about the state aid, you're talking about a potential state reimbursement. how does, what is the variable in potential? We may or may not get it, or we are going to get it?
Transportation aid is 80, well, Ron, perhaps you can speak to it. Our present transportation aid for this year, this budget coming up, yeah, was increased.
That 80.3% is our state aid reimbursable rate. File for these buses. Mm-hmm. But you have to file for approval from the commissioner to get approval for the bus purchase. And if you don't file within a certain time frame, they don't aid your buses. So there's always the potential that we wouldn't get aid, but we always follow the letter of the law and get our paperwork in on time. So
we've always
received the level of potential is very limited.
Okay.
But it's not guaranteed.
Well, I think that the other next question to ask is, if we're doing it this year, we're going to do it forever? Because why have four of them in the whole fleet? You know, to me, it would be every year you'd want them.
It seems like an option that you're going to go to.
And the survey, obviously, the different districts are in the process of making that very same decision. Some have one and are ordering the second one. Some have the second one or ordering the first one. Some, it's just by comparison. I'm just giving that data as comparison.
One other question I have now. What kind of data do we have that these other things that we're putting on there for extended warranties are actually were needed in the past? I know we've probably had one or two buses over the last few years, but how many buses have we actually had that we need to put on this extended warranty?
I don't have that data. I'm getting information from the transportation supervisor. I didn't ask for that detail.
Well, what I'm asking is, how much more did that cost us to go with these warranties?
You said 35.
I said that.
Yeah, 3,500. Yeah, 500. Yeah. $500 for transmission and the other for the
piece.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we did that information
past year.
Something like that.
This past year, and that, well, as I said, the warranty wasn't available, as I understand it, on two buses this past year, and it was $8,000 to fix the engines.
How long is this warranty going to be for?
10 years.
It is the
full
life of the recycled bus
for us. Yeah.
My next question would be: were these buses from the same? I know we buy from Bluebird, we buy from somebody else, GM or somebody. Were they the same kind of buses? Is it, you know, something?
I don't know that.
Is it something that we want to look at? So who we're purchasing it from?
I think that what they wanted to do in the past, Red, was that they purchased. They wanted to stay with the same buses because of parts, and they can have a stockpile of parts. They don't have to have a
bunch. Well, I understand that. The other point was, the other reason that we buy two and two is because they want the competition. Because if you buy just from one place and they're not, the other side's not so great to want to give you your parts and stuff, is what was explained to me. But my point is that what I'm looking at is, are they both Bluebirds? Is it something that's a problem with them? Is it, you know what I'm saying? Is it something that not only do we need to look at a warranty, but is it just one company? And do we need to address that? Because, I mean, if they're both GMs, why?
That's the same contract price.
Those are state contracts. And I would think they're probably international engines. Or they're.
I think it was Leonard Bus Sales was the quote.
Right, which.
What I was saying is, though, if I just want to know, if it's the same, is it the same company, both of them? Because what I'm saying is, down the road, if we have any more trouble with the same company,
right,
then we say, well, hey.
I guess that's something we could. Yeah. That they'll have to track and monitor. I personally think the extended warranties are probably a good idea, especially if they're going to be for 10 years. That's just the length of the bus.
Cause for the transmission five.
A transmission or you start doing work, just an hourly rate on these buses worked on now.
$100 bucks an hour.
I don't think it's.
That's usually with Quebec. Leonard's right now. If you advertise all the buses that we've had and all the problems that we had, does that come out to be?
This is what I would like to see. I'd like to see give us some kind of a report on that.
Because if it's just two buses out of all the time we've had, right, you know, it's very minor.
I think it was pretty
good. When do we need this to have the time?
What's our drop dead date?
You know, I don't have a firm answer on that. I know the buses are, the companies that make the buses are building the buses based on each resolution that is passed by the board. So the later, not a real scientific answer, but the later the decision, the later in the ordering process.
There's no contracts or anything signed until the budget.
We got 2 weeks, don't we, till next meeting?
Right. I mean, there's a deadline
for posting the proposition.
That's what I was wondering, right, with the proposition, because there's got a deadline.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What's our time frame?
It's a 45-day deadline before the budget vote, and the deadline is April 3rd.
Okay, so April 3rd?
Yeah.
So we got to vote on it.
The first notice will go in on April 3rd.
Can't we decide to get that number of buses and decide what we want on them later? Because you're only telling them how many you want. You're not telling them everything on them, are you?
Right. We have to put a price.
You're telling them the number we're buying and the amount we're buying. We're not going to exceed a certain amount.
So I guess my question is, could we pass this with that number, but expecting it to go lower if we so choose? If we don't take the options, or we don't do this, or we don't do that? Or do you want to wait till the next meeting?
Can't wait till the next meeting.
So then...
Can I revisit Scott? So what's the rationale behind the white roof and the tinted windows again?
Comfort.
The rationale told to me and the others in the area is that the white roof repels the heat, which reduces the heat interior, right, of the bus during the warmer weather. And the reverse obviously happens with the tinted windows. It keeps the heat in the colder weather so that it doesn't escape through. As well as the roof may have. I'm speaking it's from past information to me, not that I have scientific evidence of that.
Extrapolating that a little forward means it'd be colder in the winter. You know what I'm saying? No, but if it's going to reflect whatever sunlight you have, then it should be cooler inside, right?
I'm trying to go through the thermal in my head here. And have we ever had any problems with overheat in the buses of children, heat exhaustion?
Always perceptual. It depends on the rider and the ride. You're asking me. I'm giving it forward a proposition based on data. I can't tell you the motive for the data.
I'm not going to support it with that in here.
Karen, did you have any questions on this?
No, thank you. Not at this time. I'm listening to the discussion.
Okay.
Can you do a straw poll to see if we want to do it another way or not? If enough people don't want to do it, we can reword it and do it.
Well, I think Richard's got a point. We could approve it like this, and we can always do less, right? As long as we're not exceeding.
Well, the proposition does say cost not to exceed.
If we do something for less than that, then we can do that.
Like, for example, if we decide by next time, say, no white roof, no tinted windows,
right,
subtract it, we're okay.
Well, it even goes beyond that. I mean, I'd like to know the specifics we have for the roof.
I'm saying, but that also we can do. As long as we
can do it after the fact.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
We're just
we can always go lower. We just can't exceed this amount.
So yeah. Can we put that on the agenda for next week?
Yeah.
To have those two
things. Try to get some.
But we can move ahead on this number.
Okay.
At the top end.
I mean, we can vote this proposition the way it reads.
Right,
we don't have to spend $400.
That's what I'm just saying. What I'm saying. This will save us from having to have a special.
And then you don't have to worry about it getting published.
As long as we're going to address it again, yes.
Sure.
We'll have the information for next meeting. Okay. Any other questions?
So just turn it down. So the things we're going to discuss is the roof, the windows, and the warranties on the engines and the
transmissions.
Okay, four things.
Well, yeah, the roof and the windows you can discuss.
Yeah,
I mean, I think we already got that.
But
we need information on the warranty.
Yeah.
The warranty information.
Yeah. We don't, because we don't know how many have gone bad.
Okay. Any other questions on this? Okay, we need a roll call on this, please.
Karen Armstrong?
Yes, with the thought that we're going to look into the white roof and the tinted windows?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Frank Kay?
Yes.
Yes.
Leonard King?
Yes.
Stan Karofsky? Richard Levine?
Yes.
Ed Marin?
Yes.
Carol Reid? Pauline Stone?
Yes.
Yes, with the condition we're looking into it further.
And Steve Trombley?
Yes. Okay, additional items to discuss. I'm going to do the budget last, Anise. Attendance at the annual CVES Instructional Services Center, Plattsburgh, on 4-7-10 at 7:30 p.m.
Is anybody going? Both of you would like a head count.
I think I got it.
Everybody's going to be going, like Joanne knows.
Yeah, and it's they give you a tour to they take you through the facility. You know.
Okay. Vote on CVS tentative administrative budget and board candidates on 4-22-10.
What day is that?
That's a Thursday. Thursday. That's required by CVS, so if you want to vote on their budget with their board election, you must meet on that day.
You have to do it that day.
Yeah. We met in the morning last night?
We have to do it that day. No, actually, we didn't. We were able to get enough to do it.
Oh.
I think. For
one.
Okay, so that's the date we have.
Right, so I'm looking for a time if you're going to meet. If I have a quorum, so will we advertise?
You're going to have to advertise it, right?
Yeah, we have to advertise it.
Well, I can't do it during the day. I work, so it depends.
Have we established a time?
Not yet.
Okay.
Are you going to be back, or?
Yes, I will.
So how many people
it's
can
a,
make it during
it's
the day?
It's a two-minute meeting, so anybody, I mean, I know you guys would like to do it 8 o'clock in the morning, if you could, or whatever in the morning, but.
I can make it.
I don't know if anybody else, Richard would be working. Karen may be able to make it. I'm not sure about Frank. I'm going to be working.
That's three with Leonard. Stan can probably make it. He doesn't work.
It's still on the floor.
How many do you need?
Five. 8 o'clock.
Time well, I could go. I'll be there.
Okay.
Now, last year you met at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I knew
that. I think 7
o'clock at night. No, 7 o'clock at night.
Night?
7
o'clock
at night.
Yeah, it was just a couple minutes, but yeah. I think there was something going on.
I could make 7 a.m. as soon as I heard of it. I don't know if you work with somebody. If you
we can do 5:30 a.m.
You met at 7:08 and you're done at 7:22.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't take very long.
Well, depending.
Is that the fourth Thursday?
It all depends on working.
Third Thursday?
Oh.
If it was an a.m., I could do it.
It would be the third. I'm sure it must be the third Thursday.
It's the third Thursday of April.
Okay.
Yes, it is. No, it's the fourth Thursday.
Fourth Thursday.
Because the first Thursday is the first.
We did it at 7. I could be here for a couple of minutes, but I'm
7 in the morning?
I'm going to be, no, 7 at night.
Well, I could do it at 7 at night.
Quicker than me.
Okay. Let's look
night.
at our schedules, and we will confirm this at our next meeting. That still should give us plenty of time. That's the 6. The 6 is our meeting, so. That's still okay, right, Joanne?
Yes.
We can, okay. All right. Think about it. We will have to set a firm time on this on the on our meeting on the 6th. Attendance at the Clinton County School Board's 10th annual recognition dinner on 5/6 at 6 o'clock at the Rainbow Wedding and Banquet Hall. I don't know yet. I'll have to let you know.
I can go.
I plan to attend, Joanne.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I told her yes.
We're going to save a big table.
Did you get me, Joanne?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. So, actually, everybody said yes. And
I will let you know.
And you can eat whatever they feed you.
It's a buffet.
I know.
Yeah. Okay, we're back up to budget discussion.
Not a lot different from my last conversation. I have updated, and with Ron, of course, we've updated two charts for you that you've received in your packet before. They reflect some changes in revenue, anticipated revenues. I made mention also that Mrs. Armstrong had forwarded a series of questions in which we responded to, and in the throughout the series of those questions, it did have an impact on our anticipated revenues being increased. So as a result of increased revenues, it has the effect that it does on your the chart that you see in front of you. Again, from the legislator's point of view, you've read the papers, I'm sure, as much as we do. There seems to be movement occurring in the Senate to move forward with some decision about budgeting for the state. The Assembly is another whole house with another whole philosophy connected to that. So the prospect of on-time budget is growing dimmer, probably the best way to describe that. So as was the case for most boards up to maybe 2 years ago, having to make a decision on the budget to present to voters without a real firm grasp of the state numbers is a possibility again for this coming year. However, we haven't changed anything with respect to the background information I've already provided to you, with the exception of increasing revenues. And we continually look within each line item with the prospect of being able to make suggested reductions where appropriate. You know, that will continue up through until the very night you actually vote on the budget. And then, of course, as a reminder, and you know this, that after a budget is presented to the voters, the board still has the opportunity to take any unexpended dollars or new revenues that were learned after the fact and make a decision as to what to do with those in terms of applying them to the levy, which would have another effect on the tax rate. The second chart, it is an adjustment of the chart you've seen for quite some time, because with each increase, or in this case, increased revenue projection, it begins to show a different dotted line, decrease, if you will, of what allocated fund balance would be necessary to achieve whatever the goal happens to be for the board. So again, the chart in front of you drops that line down a little bit because of the effect of increased revenues coming into the picture. We still don't have, and we won't have, as Ron is off to remind me, assessments will not come in until after the budget is passed or voted on and passed favorably, we believe, by our public. But any increases in the assessments obviously have an effect on the real tax rate that affects all of our communities after the fact. But I guess by very brief summation, we are preparing for the final presentation of the budget based on any input tonight and leading up to affect the numbers, and then there'll be a period of time for the voters to hear, obviously, the budget presentation, and then there's some pieces of movement that are still available to the board once more hard data comes from the state, as well as any changes in revenue. The projected, my final comment before you, opening it to the floor, is that we built this budget as a remembrance. We built this budget on the governor's proposed, way back when, amount of reductions he anticipated would be imposed in his budget to the legislature. So even though in past years that has increased, I can't think of a year when it was lower than what the governor proposed. We built this particular budget on the assumption that it would not get any better than his first dire projection, if you will, and that's what all of these numbers are based upon. Should that increase some line somewhere once the legislature finally votes on it, it obviously will, you know, bump up or move something one direction or another. But we feel at the present time all districts are approaching, to my colleagues at least, are all approaching the scenario that was outlined very early in his budget preparations, as that's our number we have to start with, and that's what this budget projection is based on. And that's, so it's yours.
Okay. Discussion?
No, I have a question after.
Go ahead.
Everything's done in that. Okay. Propositions I've got to be brought before the public. They have to be in now so they can be posted 45 days, or just once for money?
I guess like Well, if we advertise that, we have two seats open, and the deadline to file is not until April 19th.
I'm referring to is our board goals that we had to have a three-year proposition. Reduce the terms to 3 years. We talked about that before. Does this have to go in now in order to be there at the proper time?
Would that be a proposition that's driven by the same timeline for the voters to vote on?
Probably. I didn't look that up, but I would say it would be.
Does that have to be brought forward by taxpayers' petition or by a board? I thought taxpayers had to petition that.
I believe we bring it forward. They vote on it.
I thought for like a proposition like that to go to even put forward, I thought taxpayers had to do a petition, like to change the size of the board or to change the terms.
There's one part of it that has to be what you're saying. The other part, the part of the 3 years, the size of it doesn't. The size of it is brought up by us and voted on by them.
The size of us or the term?
The term. The size of us has to be brought up by the
voters. Communities would have to initiate a change in the size of membership.
Right.
Yes.
Are discretionary, I think.
The very fact that every school has different terms tells you it's board generated, because they wouldn't be able to have them different lengths if they could.
Well, it's board generated, but was it taxpayer generated or was it board generated to set the terms? Just because it's been three, like the city, I believe, is a 5-year
Ultimately, it's the taxpayers, they have to vote. So even if you want to do it, you still can't do it without
voting. But what he's saying is to bring it forward. I understand what he's saying.
Yeah, I don't believe so.
And it spells it out in the school board.
I'm pretty sure we can bring that up, but not the number.
Perhaps as a suggestion to save some time on it, so we not to lose time, if it's discovered that the timeline is the same, it would seem like the question is that what you want to do?
I would like to propose that, yes.
And to me, the one drawback about a 3-year term over a 5-year term is you get new board members coming on board and they're doing a 3-year term. The learning curve, it takes you almost 3 to 4 years to figure out what your role is as a board member. You know what I'm saying? And so it's almost to a disadvantage to shorten the terms.
But the other part of it is, it's the advantage to the people that we represent. If we're not doing the job that they want, they can replace us in 3 years instead of waiting 5. Because they can't do anything to us until we come back up for vote.
That would have to be, I would assume, have to be researched on how that's going to work. I would assume
board
members are going to have to finish the current term.
Oh, yeah. Even people voted in this year are going to have to do the 5-year term.
Well, don't we need to have a vote to put it as a proposition?
Yes, that's why I brought it up.
So that's something we want to do next time?
The question is, if
we're driven by the same timeline,
which it probably is,
you might be losing that opportunity if you went beyond tonight. The actual specifics of it, we can do the research on and get to you quickly in an update. But I think with our attorney present, I think the caution would be to be sensitive to a timeline is probable.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that it's written right correctly, and he's going to have to.
Any other comments on that? How does everybody else feel? Just pros and cons both ways.
I don't mind bringing it to the voters if that's what the voters decide.
That's my suggestion.
It's not going to affect me because I'm not running.
Well, it's true though. Whether or not we like it or not, it's what the voters want, ultimately. So, I'm not averse to letting them vote.
I'm new at this game, so I don't know for the other, but I think I'm just going to research it with this guy, see what information there is out there on it.
So this would be for all the terms to be 3 years in the future.
Well, it's going to have to be rotated so that we have equal computer will have to do that to figure out.
Staggered terms?
Staggered terms. Otherwise, there could still be. I mean, that's the part. It needs to be figured out. I'm sure that can be done.
The only problem I see with it is you go a three-year term, you're going to have three people up every year. And you're going to have some years we didn't hardly have enough people to run.
Yep.
She
got some information.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So you can be covered by adopting proposition, which is read that paragraph, because that's it. If you don't mind reading that up loud, that's it.
You can have 3, 4, or 5 year terms, and right now we have 5. To make the changes, such changes can be accomplished by adopting a proposition at an annual meeting or election to do so.
So the annual meeting.
Mm-hmm. But does it say the board can do it, or does that come from the
doesn't speak to
in addition, propositions to increase or decrease the term of office must specify what vacancies during each of the 3 years next succeeding the adoption of such proposition will be filled for terms that ensure are nearly as impossible to equal the number of board members will be elected each year. So, I mean, we'd have to, Mr. Lavalieranda would have to draft that.
It's going to be tight trying to get that. Try. And for 45 days.
Well, that's why I'm saying, I mean, we skipped it last year. It looks like we're going to try to skip it again this year.
Yeah. I'm not trying to. I'm just saying we're.
Well, perhaps if it's the interest to pursue it, the resolution could speak to the board's support to draft language necessary to have the effect of. And then that's on record that that's what the intention is, and then the 45-day notice has then been served, and then the language of how it's done can follow. That's my guess of how you might accomplish that.
You want to go around and see how we do?
I don't know.
So you want to reduce every election that we have, all the terms would reduce from 5 to 3.
Right.
Any new elections.
Well, right. So eventually there'll never be 5-year terms anymore. They'll all go down to 3.
Right. These would be the last 5-year terms of terms for this year. What is there, 3? 2?
2. There's 2 seats up.
Don't know the mathematics of eventually will they all be up in the same year.
That's
what I'm saying.
That's the odd part about it.
Yeah, they have to be staggered.
Yeah.
Every year we have 2 seats up, and next year we only have 1 seat up.
Right, that's how it is.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm saying it could be set up so that
you'd have to have 3. You'd have 3 openings every year. A 3-year term. 3-year term, because all you can do, you got 9 members, 3 and 3, 3 every year.
Once you got into it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Once it's established, it's going to run into 3 a year, I guess.
We've been very fortunate in the last 3-4 years that we haven't lost any, only 1 member, that's all. But in the past, I can remember people were being replaced there quite regularly.
I'm 50-50. I see the pros, I see the cons. It's true. Like Frank says, there is a learning curve. You know, anybody who's come on the board knows when your first year you feel like you're lost.
And it takes part of it is, at the end of that 3rd year, if they feel like they want to do more, they can run again. And if they've been doing a good job, I'm sure people are going to put them back.
The first year, I'd say the first couple of years is
difficult.
A learning curve. Yeah. I don't know. I can see the pros and cons.
What about having?
What about like
we
some
have
5
some
3 and some
years?
3?
Can we have a couple 3 years and have the other one stay at 5, like they do with other schools? So that people who don't want to serve, like say someone doesn't want to serve a 5-year term. They only have 3 years they can give. They can run for the 3-year term.
Oh, so you'd want to change the way the elections are run. Right now, it's everybody runs, the highest vote getters gets the seats.
Yeah.
But the way you're talking about, people would have to petition
for a designated seat.
Yeah, you'd have to pick a seat.
Exactly.
No, I don't want to go there.
That's what you'd have to do. You'd have to pick a seat.
Well, Northern Adirondack has, that's a nightmare.
You would have to pick, if you staggered them, like three or five, you'd have to pick the seat you're running for. Yeah. You wouldn't be at large anymore.
I know they had one seat, they had one person run, they only had five. So,
I think a five-year term. I just think the learning curve is, if somebody gets in on board, and it takes them 2 years just to learn what's going on here, you know. And I know if somebody doesn't want to do a five-year term, they can, if they they can always always resign.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always an option.
It's an option, but then we're picking a replacement, which is not.
Well, it depends on your
For up to a year, yeah.
Yeah, for up to a year, and then
that's to be you're up to a year, and we have already done that. I mean, we've already done that.
You know, it's a good point though. But the thing is, though, to me, if you were going to resign, if you knew you didn't want to go, you would just do it early enough where they could elect somebody. You know, have it. You know, you're not going to put another year.
Technically, you still have to appoint.
Yeah. Well, no, it depends how often, remember how long, because one time we had to appoint, one time we had to elect.
Yeah, we did, and one time we didn't appoint anybody at all.
Yeah.
We just waited. And
that's actually a board prerogative. Yeah. I mean, if I were to resign today, you wouldn't have to fill my seat.
No.
You could advertise it, you could appoint.
Just
and
do it in May.
Yeah.
Right.
But that still doesn't give the voters a choice.
Right.
Well, it would, because the term, my seat would still be have to go up for vote. They would only be there for a month, and then they would have to get a petition and get reelected.
It's all driven It's all date driven. If someone was to resign after the elections, the board either appoints, or the district superintendent appoints, or the district holds another election.
Yeah.
You have to fill the seats. So it depends on the timing when they resign.
Depends on the timing.
And then the part of it is, it's a cost factor if you end up with a full vote, you know, for.
Right.
That's why they appoint usually, because you don't want to put it out to vote.
No. It's about your opinions. Karen?
Yes?
Your turn.
Okay.
Kind of a straw poll type thing.
I agree with Frank. I think there's a learning curve involved with the Board of Education. And if we were going to have strictly three-year terms for everyone, I don't agree with that.
Okay. So that's two. You have a firm decision here. It doesn't have to be firm, but.
So what would be the difference between 3 and 4 years? Or four?
Well, I think the issue is how much time does someone have to give to it.
Yeah. Each seat or some seats, eh?
You should all be the same.
Okay, if they're all the same, it's a year longer before reaching the mathematical possibility of three or four people going out the same year.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I haven't done math on it, but I think it's going to work it to that point. Staggered seats, and Mrs. Menard already spoke to that, creates running for a seat, specific term of office. Mm-hmm. That's the staggered part of it.
Right now we have two every year, except the fifth year we have one.
That
takes care of your nine.
And I have issues trying to fill three seats some years, because some years it's hard to get people to run.
Well, is that because the terms are too long? I mean, do some people?
No, it might be.
Say, I don't want to do this because it's 5 year commitment.
So
we're already not, at least from my experience, you're not getting a large pool of wannabe participants. And the larger the pool, the better chance you are likely to get people that have had certain type of experiences that can benefit the board and their participation. You never know.
Yeah, we've had them before. There's three openings, three people are in. That's no choice. You know, so I'm saying, so the numbers make a difference too.
Right.
You know, the more people you have to replace every year, the harder it is, I think.
I guess what I'm saying is, to support some of what Frank says is, Some of that overhead and time has to do with the background of the people that participate on the board. Number one. Number two.
It's their first time or not?
No, I'm saying the background of the people that are on the board. If their background has something to do with working with big budgets, working with personnel, working with the type of things that a typical business would have something to do with. That, I think, has an impact on how far you come up, quicker or later. Number two is if the board process has to do with learning the politics of the board, then there's some, I mean, I agree, there might be some overhead in that, but if the board is well established, that would take less.
Well, okay.
I guess I got.
Give me some opinions here. Let's give me a straw poll here.
I think I agree with Karen. I think, although it's a close call for me, knowing how much I've had to pick up in time. And then the other point of it is, too, that if you know you're going to run on a board and get on, then after two years, you're basically getting ready to run again. You know, I really don't want to have to keep doing that.
Okay.
And
I don't have any background to really make an educated opinion, just my layman opinions.
Say what you feel. We won't shoot you.
No, that's right. I can see both ways. My personal opinion, I think a 5 year is good, but I can see both ways.
Okay, you got three definites for 5 years. So we're split enough that we don't have tonight to be able to go forward with.
Well, the only thing I say is if we're done doing it this year, we need to drop it off of our goals. That's all.
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was on our.
Yes,
on our
it was. Okay. That's why I brought it up.
Right. I will say that in absence of not really knowing, I'd rather default to the public to be able to have the control and make the decision themselves.
Well, they made the decision when they voted for you.
Right, but to have the ability to make a decision more often is in their favor.
Yeah, because if you say, like Frank said, if you resign, that's up to the board member to resign. That's not up to the public to vote again.
Right.
So.
But I don't think there should be a stigma. Like someone, if someone only thinks they can serve for 3 years or 4 years, and they're willing to run, there's not a lot of people running, and they decide to resign, I don't think it's a bad thing, you know, because Earl had to resign for personal reasons, and we don't hold that against Earl. I don't think people should say, well, if I can't do the whole 5 years, I can't run. You know, I think they always have the option with personal reasons, or, you know, say they have a job and they want to do something else, they could always resign. And I don't think that's a bad stigma. I wouldn't be upset with anybody who did it, but that's their choice.
Okay. Well, we can, if need be, when the full, because we don't have five votes one way or the other right now, so it's kind of a dead issue.
Yep.
So, on that particular thing. I agree with Leonard, we either need to pursue this earlier with the full board so that we know exactly what we want to do when it's figured out, or we need to get it off our board goals.
Prepare to retreat.
It needs to come off the board goals one way or the other, so that'll be discussed at retreat.
Yeah, that's how it got there. So
okay.
That's where it would
all
come
right.
off.
Any other budget discussion then, as far as I'm a little bit behind because I did miss the last meeting, so I don't know your major discussion at the last meeting, so I guess I'm just going to ask, what was the general consensus on what we were going to use for fund balance in this budget?
We did that one.
And we haven't made any types of decisions yet.
I would like to see more of the fund balance go on the tax rate.
How much are we figuring right now? 2,500?
2.5. The chart, that's my reference point.
Like
that's
see,
why I redid the chart to show you.
I'd like to see more fund balance go on to drop the tax rate lower.
The effect on the tax rate at 2.5 is a little bit lower than we are right now.
It's a little bit lower than we are right now.
I'd like to see more bonds, so we can lower it more.
Yeah. There's two points. I want to put a big chunk, at least $2.5 million, and I'm willing to go up to $3 million if there's support for it. I just want people to remember that at this rate, we got 2 years, and people have been talking to me, and they say, I don't want a 0-0 and a 15.
Right.
So I want to put money on it, but it's me. As long as we bring it down to a negative, I'm happy. If the 2.5 does it, but I will support 3 if enough people want to do it. Just understanding that going forward, that they won't remember the cut.
Yeah. I I kind of agree with that too. I'd like to get 2 years. I'd like to get 3 years out of
yes.
this if we could.
But so my point is, though, if we lower a little bit and can handle three instead right. of two, I'd rather do that.
Right.
So could we do 3 years at 2.5?
3 years?
Yeah.
Ron, you punch in numbers there?
Well, that's about 7.
It's hard to say because we have
variables as far as
so many variables.
What will be left over, if there's any left over, what will be additional collected revenues if the state comes through on some
right.
debts that they owe us.
Just
that could all factor into right. 1-2 years down the road. But on these projections, we would be cutting it close to get 3 years.
The third year.
If you
but there'd be something for the third year at least.
Obviously, the more you bump it up, the less out you go.
Right.
What about 2.7 instead of the 2.75 instead of the 3? Kind of take an in between.
2.7 versus 2.5?
I will go on
that as highest.
Yeah.
The 2.75 right here.
That's what we had last year.
Yeah.
That's what we had last
year. I'll support that too. I just think that if we do a little bit less, it gives us a little more leeway a couple years out.
Well, I agree with Richard. I think the majority of the taxpayers out there are going to tell you, I don't want a 0.0 and a 10. You're right.
So if we do the 2.5, we're actually lowering it. It's going into the red. So it's a negative number if we do 2.5 the way it looks now.
2.5, plus we don't know what assessments and everything are going to be. We may even, without having to use more than the 2.5, be able to lower it even more when everything comes in and is said and done.
Well, correct. Assessments won't change the levy. It'll just change the rate.
Right.
Change
but the rate. Any from this year, unexpected funds would also could be, that's a board decision what to do with.
Right.
Because it would otherwise go back to the fund balance
okay.
if you didn't take another action.
Karen, go ahead.
Just for clarification, if we put it on 2.5 right now, does that mean our tax rate from the current year will be reduced by 6 cents per thousand?
Yes. That's our projection, Mrs. Armstrong.
And do we have an estimate, and you may have just answered that, but do you have an estimate of what we're going to have left over this year?
Not yet. I can provide that. And some of that is also an unknown because, as you know, we did pre-purchasing for next year, so we can run the totals up on that. The list of what would be requested to pre-purchase is long enough that we could continue to just keep purchasing, which would reduce next year's expenses again. So, but it's a very simple answer to your question. We don't have it tonight. Can get it for the board because that figure will be what you have still as a board left to apply to the tax levy.
I like going down a little bit. It shows that we're doing our job, but we're going to get crucified if we got it. 2 years, not going to raise it 10 points. Okay, let's, people don't want, because that's what's going to happen. If we put too much on it, we're going to have a spike. So I'd rather have something close to 2.5, like Leonard says, even 2.75. Let's not go so much that we don't have enough left for the third year to soften the blow.
The mysterious variable, there are several, as you know, you are a veteran board member, so you know all of these things I'm describing, but some of the mysterious values are, one, what's the state's economy going to be in 2 years out? It's really very personal guess. Everyone has their own. That's a variable that has less certainty to it as we approach the year beyond next year. I guess kind of echoing Mr. Levine's point. The second one is at the same time that's occurring, we still reside in an area, our school district is in an area where any new quote-unquote property development seems to be falling into our area. So predicting what the increase on the tax rolls will be 2 years out is just as a mysterious a guess. We have some pretty positive signs. Nova Bus's expansion with their contracts for, I think it was in Hawaii, speaks well for their longevity to being in the area. There's the property out by the theater that's been raised and ready for some kind of development that we're getting clues from, the town of Beekman Town that there's some development that's coming there. My point of all that is saying whatever number we think we would guess at by way of assessment increase, it's probably going to be wrong because the picture is constantly changing. The fixed point is the voters vote, and then the picture is constantly in movement.
See, let's see where Karen wants to go on how much.
My personal opinion is looking at the present chart with the circumstances that we know today, I would lean toward 2.75, but with no promise of what we're going to do in the future. Because that's going to be driven by our, state aid and those kinds of things. So I think we should be very careful of our promise into the future. But we know right now where we stand, and that I'm certain we're going to have a little bit of money left over this year. And so that's just my personal opinion. We're on a tightrope. It's a very difficult thing to do. But I think we still have options when we set a fund balance, because the voters vote on the total budget. Rather, you know, we wouldn't want to go forward and tell them something that we can't do or won't do. But I would be comfortable with 2.75.
Hold back that. 2.75 is good for me.
I could live with that.
Like Mr. Amo just said, that's going to bring us down to approximately the 1604, and we know that's going to drop from there.
Yeah.
It's going to take us down at under 16.
I do have a question, though, in which, and I don't know what you put into this current budget for staffing, but I know we have some retirees, and I'm looking at class sizes, Scott. And I really think it's going to be a mistake to replace retirees at this time, because we don't know what's going to be in the future, and we don't know where we're at. And if we're replacing retirees when our class sizes are what they are, I just think it's a mistake, and I would have to vote no on any new hires. I think the class sizes are very low, and they don't even come close to contract size. Why would we want to hire teachers and then 2 years or 3 years down the road face what Peru is, face what Beekmantown, or not Peru, but the city of Plattsburgh is doing? City of Plattsburgh sends out pink slips. I think they sent out a half dozen or more pink slips. I know Peru sent out pink slips, Northern Adirondack. They're all facing serious staffing reductions. And to me, I think it's with the class sizes the way they are right now, they should be able to be absorbed into the buildings.
Well, we have some data on this. If I'd like him to go ahead and read that off and present that.
Sure. First, I can totally understand the position. There's no question about that. The variable of class sizes is always controversial, and there's no fixed value on it. What we know we have in our current contract are ranges per grade level, and what we know in our projected enrollments are numbers I will read to you. There's no mystery to it that this board, this and future previous boards has repeatedly, historically, chosen to, when possible, keep class sizes at the elementary grades, obviously lower if they can. As I said in my update, lower is a relative term. Smaller is smaller to what? You know, that's where the rubber meets the road. But anyway, the data. The contract specifies that UPK through first grade students' enrollment can vary between 17 and 19. I think the word, I don't have it in front of me, but I think the actual wording in the contract is that is considered to be acceptable. But once you get past the 2021, it's interesting because there's not a match. It's not after you get past 19, there's new language. There's a couple of more students per grade before then it's considered to be undesirable. So you got those two terms operating. So not to confuse the board, we'll stay with the range of acceptable or desirable, if you will. UPK to first grade is 17 to 19 students. Grades 2 to 3 is 22 to 26 students. And grades 4 through 5 is 25 to 29 students. Now, as Frank already said, and you well know, we don't have those class sizes presently. So what we do have, if you take Beekmantown Elementary School at the kindergarten level projected for next year, there would be three I'm just going through the projections without acting on what to do with two positions that are occurring through retirement. By the way, both of those positions do affect Beekmantown Elementary. Both retirements are in the one building, just as a reference.
What grade level?
I can't recall the grade.
Kindergarten
and...
grade.
But the staffing, and not to confuse it, Pauline, but the staffing within can change.
It can move.
You know, yeah, whatever grade entry doesn't mean third, that's the grade. Right. That's yeah. It could be a later grade.
It's kindergarten and third.
But technically, I mean, even if you, I can remember when West Shazy had, when they were in operation, they had student size class sizes of 12 and 13.
Mm-hmm.
And the main building, my son was in a first grade with 22 in the first grade, when the same first grade in West Shazy building had like 13 or 14.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you talk about equity, there was never any equity between those two buildings.
And that's a point I'm raising, is that this changing ratios of students and teachers can theoretically, and that's for the board to decide, is the perception of equity okay. between two different buildings.
But as a but even if it's a, say if all of a sudden yep. Cumberland Head is out of whack with the yep. with the main building or vice versa, you yep. have the prerogative to move teachers from one building to the other. I mean, yep. that's as a superintendent, you have yep. that prerogative.
Where the students are is driven by our tennis czar.
Right, policy. But I'm just but saying.
You can move them to fill holes.
Yeah, if it doesn't create the disequalized cost to the district, that option is available. You're right.
But the one question that springs up for me is we're waiting on the building use plan that's going to affect
yep.
us.
Right.
Yeah.
And the first, well, we presented to the Ops Committee the charts.
Yes.
But there's a lot of, you know, yeah. wade through a lot of the charts to understand right. what's in there. Anyway, you're right. And to that extent, limited data is where are we for next year? If we knew nothing else, what would be the class size, teacher class size ratios? So I'll go on with this. Big Bend Town Elementary at kindergarten is expecting 55 students. Three teachers would be 18.33 in the kindergarten classroom. At Cumberland Head, it's 64 students with four teachers. They would be 16 in that classroom. Grade 1 is 50, Beekmantown, Cumberland Head. Beekmantown, 55 students, four teachers, is 13.75. At the grade 1 at Cumberland Head, 64 students, 16 in the classroom. Grade 2, Beekmantown, 56, four teachers, that's 14. Grade 2, Cumberland Head, 63 students, 15.8. 74 students in grade 3, 18 and a half, four teachers. Grade 3, 71 students, four teachers, 17.6. Grade 4, 65 students, four teachers, at 16.25. Grade 4, Cumberland Head, 77 students, four teachers, 19.25. 60 students in grade 5, at Cumberland Head, four teachers, 15. Cumberland Head, 71 students, four teachers, 17.5. And to bring a summary observation, because there's a lot of numbers to you, the variable here is to know that I think I made my note up here. I did. Where did I write? Oh, 11 of the possible 12, kindergarten, first, second, of those 12 combined, of those 12 classes across both schools, 11 of the possible 12 grades are currently at the low end of the ranges for their respective grade. They're either underneath the low end or they're at the low end. The point is, 11, one out of the 12 is in the range, provided to be a quote
desirable
at that grade level.
Yep.
But that not a but, it's just a reality. That condition has existed for a while. It's not a surprise one year. It's process of decisions that have been reached previously.
He does have a good point. If, like I'm saying, if you dissolve 113 class and you could spread them out and stay between 17 and 19, that's something you want to look at anyway. But still, until we get the building use survey, because they might want us to move all the classes like 1, 2, 3 in one building, and then you'd have an effect there too. So
yeah,
kind of hard to.
I just can't see why we'd want to hire in this environment when you look at what's happening just in our community. People are losing jobs left and right. My neighbor lost his job. Pfizer, whatever it is, they're laying off a bunch of people. You know, how can we justify hiring teachers when our class sizes are as low as they are?
Well, there are two of them. One of them is the budget of people retiring is not the same as new hires.
But you're still talking. If you replace two teachers, though, you're still talking with benefits, probably $150,000. If you throw the benefits.
I understand that. If you have a set budget, you have people with a lot of time in the system retiring, that's a lot different than two people coming in.
Yeah.
That's a significant. So,
right.
So if we're looking at fiscal responsibility, then we have to address what is the budget of the departure versus the coming in. So it's not as simple as swapping one for another.
I agree what you're saying. The other part about that is too. Now the other schools are cut positions, but they have to because of money. Do we really want? We don't have to do it right now. Do we want to raise class sizes now? And then down the road, you cut the teaching. Yeah, then right. We can only raise them so far because the contracts anyway. So my point is, though, if you were going to hire anybody now, it'd be in a stipulation that 2 years down the road, the position might not be there. They're going to have to live with that because that's the environment we're in. Whether we decide to hire them, besides the point, but my point is, now we don't have to do it. The other schools have no choice.
Yes.
They're going to have to do it. So you have to make a decision. Do you want to make class size is bigger just as a point, you know, to tell the people, well, I got rid of a teacher too.
I think we should look at it more aggressively next year if it becomes an issue because certainly all the studies show that increasing class sizes is detrimental to the income of the districts. I mean, as soon as you start diminishing the powerful effect of a good school system, people don't want to come into the district. And that's a fact. And so now your ability to have income starts going away. If the school district, if everybody wants to move into where the good school districts are there, and good school programs typically have a higher teacher to student ratio, and you can't change that. Those are the facts. As long as, like Mr. Hayes said, as long as we're fiscally responsible, we're okay with the budget. But I don't want to go down the path of having too many kids in the class.
Well, I would actually like to wait and see what we're going to get. We paid good money to this outfit to give us some recommendations.
Yeah, I agree.
And if we go ahead and make a judgment ahead of time, I think we need to wait and see what they're going to tell us.
Yeah.
That way we're going to vote on something we at least. Yep. Otherwise, we're voting ahead of time.
Yeah, because I agree. Because we might need them somewhere else.
Well, there's time to adjust that.
Yeah, that's right. But we need to wait for that.
On
the advisory solutions piece, I'm pretty confident that their report, if you will have been finished. And if there is an operations committee meeting prior to the board week, the operations committee will hear the recommendations, if you will. Or the suggestions. Is that a day? That's the night.
Yeah, I believe we have been scheduled for this.
Yes. Yeah, to
we
come. And, then, and the board meeting is at night. My point is we'll have some data.
We'll have
differently.
Data. Okay.
All
right, so
that's it.
Can we go one
yep.
more thing? Sorry. I think Mr. Hayes' approach to fiscal responsibility is correct. I'd be more inclined to revisit our expenditures on even buses or anything else before we start cutting teachers.
Yep.
Well, I'm not saying cutting teachers. We're not I'm saying not replacing.
Or not even not replacing. Before we go to any of that.
I mean, I'm not saying laying teachers off. I'm just saying.
That's great. I understand your point.
That was clear to me.
We'll get the information from Advisory Solutions, and we will
everything
move forward.
Everything's on table
from there. Anything else on the budget right now? Then I think we're pretty well okay. Okay, Brett, do you have a report for us?
Yeah. Okay. First, starting off. I don't know if any of you went to it, but there was a West Side Story play at Shazy School that, from what I heard, was very excellent. And we had a few students from Beaver Town in it. I didn't get to go. I was out of town over the weekend doing colleges and whatnot. On that note, variety show from Beaver Town is coming up. I believe it's April 9th. I know auditions are supposed to be today. It's kind of like our challenge show. We do it each year. Usually pretty very well done. This Monday into today, there was a college trip for juniors. They were able to go see schools around Syracuse area. I believe they're getting back this evening. They started doing it last year. It's like an overnight trip. You see two or three schools a day. Friday, on the day that I was not here in school, and I wanted to participate in this, but I wasn't able to, there was a student-run panel for diversity. where there's a guy from Plattsburgh State who comes in and works with the diversity students, and they did a panel where I believe there was four students that ran kind of ran the discussion. They each gave a speech, and then I'm not sure exactly how it went, but there was like a group discussion about diversity in school, ways it's seen, ways it can be prevented, just kind of like a school discussion. So from what I heard, it went very well. I haven't been able to find out as many details as I wanted to, but other than that, spring sports started last week. Last week was really nice, so a lot of sports were outside. Then this week, we're back in the gym, so.
Back to reality.
Yeah, but other than that, not too much else.
That's it?
Yep.
Questions for that? Okay. No, it's I'm going on a public comment, so. What's your?
Well, we're gonna in your update, Scott. You had a paragraph about the UPK projections.
Yeah. You want to cover that?
You can.
Okay. Let me. Yeah, I did say that. And let me find my data.
Oh, people have to be calling.
Actually, I think I made copies of this. It might be easier just to give it out to you tonight and decide what you would like to do with it. Mrs. Armstrong, you won't have this handout in front of you, so I apologize for that because I just prepared it for tonight. But I think we can walk through it easily enough. What I did from last meeting, there was a suggestion raised as to what the UPK program consists of now, the cost to run it, of course, and then some possible consideration of if the program was to be expanded, either half days becoming full days or serving more students, what would the effect be from a monetarily point of view, as well as a space point of view. And I don't want to forget the space question because that's an important question, obviously. So what the chart indicates is that we point out where the full-day programs are. Both Beekman Town Elementary and Cumberland Head has a full-day program, and Cumberland Head has a half-day program. And the number of students served, you can see in that column, which is 18 Beekman Town Elementary, Cumberland Head is 18, and the full programs, and the half program, also at Cumberland Head, has 14 students. Our UPK grant amount, salaries and benefits, are at 202 for the whole program, 202, 284. Purchase services and contractual, if there's support services needed, that's another 228. And materials and supplies, another 3 for approximately 228. District contribution on that 228, because it's predominantly grant funded, is 38,741. So the two full programs are grant funded, the half program the district picked up on its own. And therefore the whole program is the amount you see listed, 266,865. How many students are on a waiting list? Well, we identified 24. And the question of how many are attending half day now that would like to go full day are 14. So the 14 in the half day program are the same 14 that would go to a full day program. That's important because it doesn't expand the number of students served. You follow my point of bringing that out? Okay. So then the question in my mind became, well, if a half-day program went to a full-day program, given that there still are no new students served, what would be the additional cost involved? And that's what the half-day to full-day chart reads. The total cost, salary, and benefits, and there's teacher aid costs with that program, would be $71,461 with supplies and materials, so it bumps it up to $71,961. In other words, going from a half-day to a full-day, because it's not grant funded, would require contribution from the board to that amount. Then I asked the question, if in fact we're going to try to serve more students on the waiting list, if the half day won't do it, but a full day would, how much would that cost to expand the program to another day? And you can see the numbers there. Salaries and benefits now become 94,682. Materials and supplies. Furniture, because we have to outfit the room differently. Half day has the same furniture, AM or PM, but a brand new program, you have to build it from scratch, is approximately that 8,600 for a total of 103,782. The question on, which is not listed here, the question is if there, which building, if there was consideration to expand the program, the half day becoming full requires no new room. Obviously, it's the same room, it's just used twice.
AM and PM. However, if we're asked to add a classroom to create another section for UPK, the location of that classroom is a hunt to be determined, to put it simply. All of our, as you see, our two full programs are currently at one each at the two buildings, and the half day is at Cumberland Head. To find a full program space at Cumberland Head would be the challenge. And I think the principal, not here tonight, but I think the principal would say, yep, that'd be a challenge, finding another empty room, as it were, suitable according to state ed for the size that you need to run a program. It definitely would be a equal challenge at Cumberland Head. Now, throw into that your recent conversation. If, in fact, there are a reduction in numbers of teachers, those are classrooms that open up at one building. So I just bring it all to the fruition. There's the data. As a follow-up to the question mm-hmm. raised last week, or 2 weeks ago.
So basically, even if we converted the half-day to full-day and took four students that are on a waiting list, we'd still have 20 people that wouldn't be served.
That's right. Correct. Half-day to full-day would drop the waiting list down, but there'd be the same list that basically minus four kids.
So right. Would you say that number, if you were to include all the students in the waiting list?
You'd have to have two classrooms.
Would that be even
one more class?
You need a full.
You'd be adding.
No, if we take care of all the kids, you'd have to have one more class. You'd have to make the 14th a full.
And then have to go to a full and then add a full.
If we're saying the same words, a half and a full would be needed to take care of all of them.
But that's not 103. That would be
180.
That would be 180. That would be the 71 for the half and then the additional 103 for the full. So that would be our
now. What is the age group? Is this 4-year-olds that are going to be going to kindergarten next year? So what's the projection for next year? Is this a projection for next year for students waiting, or are they all going to be going to kindergarten?
It varies every year because many parents are waiting to find out before they commit. We send out the request, mm-hmm. but we don't invite them to apply for something we don't offer. So
is it pretty stable every year though? Number of children?
You know, Donna's not here, but I believe from a financial point of view, Ron, could you answer that? When the program, we expanded it to half day, another half day, because the waiting list was so big.
Right.
So if that helps, there was a time when it wasn't. It was totally grant funded, and the Board of Education several years ago decided to add on our recommendation added the half day program because there was a waiting list. Mm-hmm. So if that's any way of predicting how long will there be a waiting list. And that I can't tell you.
Two
I really
questions.
Can't.
Is 18 the top? Could you go to 20?
I think class size is 18.
Okay,
I think that's
back.
A cap on it.
Okay.
And
I believe
so. Mother for help.
How?
17.
First come, first serve.
17 by contract, which is reported.
It's 17?
17 to 19 by contract.
Oh, well, yeah, but so 8, yeah.
No, they have first. I think it's first. I think it's how you sign up.
No, I think it's a lottery.
Is it?
A lottery.
It's a
well,
lottery.
It's an interesting lottery, to put it simply. If there are enough people who, you know, use an even number of 10, just for sake of discussion, if 10 individuals say, I'd like to have my child enrolled in a UPK program, and my preference is full day, and there is a program that allows up to 10, then by lottery, it's kind of like there's nobody else to overlook by drawing your name, you're
right.
in.
Right.
But where the issues come is when they do the lottery system, making selections on the preferences individuals make, puts with a waiting list people not getting the preferences because the pick took their slot away. Then you have to go back to the second round and make a decision. Do you want to be in a half-day program? Sometimes on the waiting list, individuals pass.
Yeah.
You know, they'll pass on a half-day, quote-unquote, is
they
not to my satisfaction.
Yeah.
It's a full day or I don't need to be on the list.
Yeah.
Okay. Karen, go ahead.
I may have missed some discussion at the prior meeting, but I want to just express this. We just had a conversation about two retiring teachers, and some have a thought process of increasing class size in order to save money. I'm assuming that what we're discussing now is not mandated, or we probably wouldn't be having this discussion. So it bothers me a little bit that we're looking at increasing possibly $72,000 for something we're not mandated to do. And my question is the district allowed, if I were a parent and wanted my child in a half-day program, probably or a full-day program because I work, are we barred from charging for this particular class that we're not mandated to provide?
You mean instead of them paying for childcare?
You can't specialize it. Yeah, I believe the answer to that, Karen, is we could not charge because it would be comparable to, well, I'm going to suggest that an argument could be made. It would be comparable to putting a cap on class sizes, but you'll charge a per head for if you want to send your child here.
Yeah.
It costs us this much more for that classroom, so we're going to assign a fee for you to come into the room. I think the same logic applies to UPK.
My personal opinion, because of what the district faces in the future, I would not support spending additional money where we're not mandated to do this particular item.
How's everybody else? Any other questions on this, actually? I know this was just
Would the grant change in dollar figure? If we offer more, or is the grant
it's not a matching or anything. It's what the state establishes to be the available grant monies from year to year.
That's why it's so high.
The grants, as grants go, it's been one of the more solvent, steady ones, but, and not to be a detraction to your question, but the point is, UPK grants?
Is it UPK federal or state?
UPK grant is...
State.
So state budgets determine.
Well, we're looking at. Yeah. Now would we have to pick it up if it went away?
UPK has gone down each year.
Yeah. UPK grants are not required. You know, many districts have done their own or filed for the grants.
It's nice to have information.
Yep.
Because
I want to respond to Karen's statement.
Yep.
Karen.
Yes.
So we went through this exercise several years ago with our kids, and we were fortunate enough to be able to put our son in a half-day program where a lot of our people that we knew could not, and they didn't have the fortune of being able to financially be able to handle a parent not be able to work. That's one of the problems with the half-day program. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the public perspective was that how is it that we're able to pay our taxes, have this tremendous fund balance, and not be able to educate our children at their most primary source of premise of education going into public education, where it's most critical as a taxpayer?
Well, my personal opinion would be if the state felt as strongly about it, they would have lowered the required age where we would be mandated to serve 4 years old. Once, if we put this in our budget and continue with the practice of increasing our expenditures and serving more and more, will we then be faced with providing the education for the three-year-olds? That's my personal opinion.
That's a good point. I mean, I also have the philosophy that our state and government as a whole has also placed us at a comparable, not as great education. So I think we need to look beyond the state and have the frame of mind to do what's best for our children, regardless of what the state says. Number one. Number two, I'm happier to have more teachers, less students per class in a tent with crayons than a prettier building. You see my perspective there? I mean, what's most important to our kids is what I'm trying to look at from a fiscal perspective. That's all.
Just to make a comment, I mean, we agree too, but that's why they made the Excel project, so that wasn't a choice. Because the buildings had been run down because that wasn't a priority. We didn't spend district money to do it. So.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on. Public comment? Anybody would like to make a comment? Yes?
I have a comment question that I have to discuss with Mandakin. My name is Kathy Buckley, and I was listening when you were discussing term limits. Is it possible to consider that if someone is running for the first time, it is a five-year seat, but if they're running for a second term and they're elected, could they possibly have the option of a three-year seat?
Well, that's something we could look into, I guess.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Okay, we do have an executive session.
I make a motion to appoint Steve Quirk Pro Tem.
I'll second it.
You're welcome, Steve.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Motion to go into executive session.
By
Leonard.
Second.
Seconded by Richard. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Steve
Gibson. I'm sorry. That is executive session is to discuss a particular person's employment history.
It's going to be a long session or short?
No decision was made.
It's going to be as short as you guys allow it to be.
All right.
Are we going to have any actions coming out of executive?
No.
No, we will have no. There will be no action coming out of executive session.